Hello everyone, I am Brooke Murphy, the Custom Content Strategist and Editor with Becker's Healthcare. I am pleased today to be joined by two guests as we take a deeper dive into the topics of value-based care, financial analytics, and the future of hospitals and health systems. As we have a lot to discuss, I'll jump right in by introducing our guests. Steve Allegretto is the Vice President of Value Innovation and Strategic Analytics for Yale New Haven Health System, a $4.4 billion health system with over 24,000 employees located primarily in Connecticut. He is a certified public accountant with a master's degree in public health from Yale University. He has had various teaching responsibilities at Yale School of Medicine's Epidemiology and Public Health Program, and has a deep interest in demonstrating how the actual application of integrated clinical, operational, and financial data drives actual improvement in patient care quality and cost while generating opportunities for value innovation and venture creation. We are also thrilled to be joined by Dan Michelson. Dan is the CEO of Strata Decision Technology, where his focus is to ensure the company delivers on its passion, helping hospitals and health networks drive margin to fuel their mission. The company's solutions are used by over 1,000 healthcare organizations, including many of the largest and most influential healthcare systems in the U.S. With over 25 years of healthcare experience, Dan has been one of the industry's leaders in developing the healthcare information technology market, including serving as one of the original work group members of the Certification Commission for Healthcare Information Technology and authoring the book Margin Plus Mission, a prescription for curing healthcare's cost crisis. He has provided strategy and process redesign consulting for many of the leading hospitals and health systems in the U.S. and served in leadership roles for Baxter Healthcare and AstraZeneca, two leading medical companies. So Steve and Dan, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having us, Brooke.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
And so with that, let's go ahead and jump into our first question. Dan, what are the strategies that you believe to be absolutely necessary for healthcare systems on their journey to creating a more viable and sustainable value-based business model?
Yeah, Brooke, well, I won't share my perspective because I think we all kind of have our own opinions on different things that could work. Instead, what I'll do is give you a little bit of a highlight from the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference. It took place in San Francisco a few months ago. The reason why that lens is helpful is there was about 25 health systems that presented their strategies. And so I took a shot at summarizing some of the things that they had shared. And I broke it down to three basic buckets. One is delivering scale. The second one is leveraging applied analytics. And the third one is ultimately delivering value. On the delivering scale side, clearly there's been a ton of merger activity. So, you know, you have mergers for organizations between states like in Illinois, where I'm at, and Wisconsin, that's Advocate and Aurora coming together between many different states. One of the examples would have been Dignity and Catholic Healthcare Initiatives, or within a state, such as Greenville and Palmetto in South Carolina, or between different parts or segments of the industry like Anthem and CVS. So this kind of path to scale is going on everywhere. But ultimately, what needs to happen is the output of that and what people were sharing is that you need to become a brand and you need to not just call yourself a system, but really operate as one. And that's really what people are trying to figure out as these bigger organizations are being formed. In the applied analytics space, this idea of not just bringing together data, but really leveraging it from an analytics perspective is a still a to-be, you know, for most healthcare delivery systems right now. So they're really trying to engineer an output, you know, from that effort. And Yale and Steve and his team are a good example of that. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But an area where people are really digging in is just on measuring cost. So there's a whole movement going on in the cost accounting space. It's kind of like EHRs were an enabler on the clinical data side. That's now happening with advanced cost accounting. And then using that data to really engage physicians. And that's really what gets to the last area, which is value. There's just a need to really think of the business model in a different way. And that's driving a lot of different action for a lot of different organizations.
Right. So then, Dan, how are hospital systems succeeding in measuring and managing their costs and their margins? And what are some of the areas of opportunity there?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Brooke. We're kind of entering an age of what's called advanced cost accounting. So in the same way that electronic health records and therefore clinical data became ubiquitous over the last 15 years, advanced cost accounting and therefore financial data is becoming mission critical for healthcare systems. So the main requirement in the deployments that we're seeing are for more advanced methodologies that bring data that's more accurate, more accessible, and more actionable, ultimately more trusted. And the endpoint that that's serving is really twofold. One is the ability to take on this new financial model of taking on risk through bundled contracts is predicated upon really knowing if those type of agreements will even be profitable. And there's really no way to know or understand that without taking on cost, much less being able to effectively manage those type of agreements or arrangements longitudinally without being able to see that information for every patient and every physician every day. The second area that I guess become an output of this really huge push towards getting accurate cost data is just using that data to drive out variation and waste. Every health system of size and scale is focused on taking out whether it's $50, $100, $150 million. And the reason for that is the top line isn't growing in the way that it used to. And because of what I mentioned before, they're taking on different types of contracts and different types of structures that require them to get really smart. It's an area that they just truly weren't focused on before.
Great. So then, Steve, I'll pass it over to you. Do you have anything to add here?
Well, yeah, I think Dan did a really good job of talking about the data being trusted. And again, as we move more along the financial risk side of things, and, you know, he had mentioned also that variation matters. And I, you know, as we all know that we're getting paid less, you know, our revenue per unit of service continues to drop. And our ability to manage the cost shift from payers, we know that some payers, especially on the government side, don't cover their cost. That forces us to focus on our cost side of the equation as we continue to be constricted on the revenue per unit of service. And that forces us to understand what is the financial risk relating to variation in quality. And in order to be able to understand that, you need a cost accounting system in order to be able to answer that question of what is the financial risk of variation in quality.
Right, right. So, Steve, I'd love to dial in a little bit more on your particular work and experience. How have you been able to leverage your EMR, cost accounting, or quality data investment to drive long-term improvements while also monitoring patients in real time?
Yeah, it's funny, Brooke, that you asked that question. We just had a meeting this morning as we're talking about continuing to leverage our electronic medical record in real time to manage and understand patient variation as it's occurring. So us being able to understand as we take on risk, we have risk now for readmissions for Medicare, for example, you know, how can we leverage identifying those patients when they present themselves in the emergency room with the clinicians who are going to make that decision on whether they should be readmitted appropriately clinically. So we've actually, you know, used our EMR in ways to set flags up for certain patient populations so that when they present themselves in the ER, you know, as we pilot this for bundled type payments, populations like major lower joints and congestive heart failure patients and patients with coronary artery bypass graft, that we can engage those clinicians in that clinical continuity for that patient, you know, as it occurs. And what that allows us to do is have, again, clinical and financial conversations about patients at the time we are providing care. You know, Dan had mentioned, you know, how can we leverage analytics? So our ability to be able to identify those patients in real time, know exactly what our potential clinical outcomes might be, given the levels of service that we provide, and then what does that relate back to in terms of the financial? And being able to leverage both the cost accounting, the EMR, and the quality data, you know, we've been able to, you know, take costs out of our system. We've been over $150 million that we've kept out of our organization, looking at very specific clinical populations and leveraging the investments that we've made in analytics.
Right. So as Dan also mentioned before, physician engagement is a component and plays a role here. Steve, what do you see as the major obstacles in establishing trust between physician groups and hospitals and health systems?
Well, you know, traditionally, you know, as we've taken a look at, you know, looking at patient continuity, we now call it clinical continuity. We really need to understand not only the patient's care in the inpatient and outpatient settings in the hospital, but what are their care settings on the outpatient side for our primary care physicians as well as our specialty physicians. And, you know, we've been in a value-based arrangement. We've been in the bundled payment care improvement program for 3.5 years. We modeled a program after that that also takes a look at looking at populations over 90 days, looking at their readmissions, you know, looking at those quality and cost events. In order to partner with the physicians, we've needed to understand how they interact with them. Do they see the patient within 14 days, for example, after an in-hospital case? Are they addressing in their medication lists and their problem lists that are in our EHR? So we've developed, again, a program where if the physicians comply with, if you will, clinical process measures, the clinical outcomes for the patients improve, we measure the financial benefit of that, and then we share some of that improvement financially with the physicians. We've been on this journey with those physicians. We've developed these measures in conjunction with them. We've not forced them upon them. So that allows us to build the trust while improving the clinical continuity for those patients longitudinally over time. And that has been, you know, one of our drivers of success in engaging physicians.
So then, Steve, I'd love to maybe dial it out here. How do you see maybe the use of financial analytics and performance platforms in helping hospitals and health systems to fill the triple win?
Well, that's a really good observation as we've taken a look at clinical continuity. We take a look at the triple win as that which benefits the patient. So as we take a look at the triple win for the patient, it's how do we improve their quality? How do we improve their patient engagement? You know, Dan had mentioned the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference, and he had talked about building scale. You can't build scale if you can't build a good, sound patient engagement strategy where they want to keep coming back. So the first part of that triple win is, you know, demonstrating to the patient that clinical continuity is good for them and allows for better outcomes. And the second piece of that is the engagement, if you will, of the physician in their care and the hospital. And how can we make sure that we address those things that are important to the physician and the hospital? What are those? It's building unparalleled value for our patients. That program is anchored in improving quality and process measures that brings the physicians along and also allows us to be able to manage our cost per unit of service in a much different way. And then finally, the other part of the triple win is what's the advantage for the payer? You know, how does this benefit them specifically? I mentioned that we were in the bundled payment program as we've been managing our costs given the cost shifts, and the payers need to reward us for the improvement in value, and that's exactly what the bundled payment program does. Why is that important for CMS? CMS takes an overall reduction in their fee-for-service revenue in order for us to participate. So it benefits them because they pay us less. It benefits the patient because their quality is improved. And ultimately, because quality is improved, our margin is improved. So it creates a triple win.
So given that we just talked about the triple win and a ton of health systems are losing big right now and under a lot of pressure, what do they need to be able to do right now, Dan?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brooke. I think there's one common denominator, whether you're looking at what do we need to do today and what do we need to do to get ready for the future, and that is bringing down cost. We work with 200 healthcare delivery systems. They've driven out roughly or have been focused on driving out tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, each one of them. And it's because the top line hasn't been growing. You know, there's been a mix change, there's been a payer change, and there's been a business model change. So it's the triple whammy, if not more. The twisted part, though, is that, well, let's just say the average healthcare delivery system is a $1 billion business. Well, if you follow the money, the dollars there are mainly driven by the decisions that the clinicians make. So roughly 80% of the cost is driven by those clinicians. The reality is that none, in most cases, have any access to cost information whatsoever. So a big part of the fix is engaging physicians, as we talked about before, but engaging them honestly and directly as partners and sharing information with them in a trusted fashion. If you ask the clinicians today, you know, whether they get access to cost information, most will say rarely, all of them will say rarely, if ever. And because so much of this is contingent upon them actually understanding the impact of their decisions, not that that cost should be driving what they do or deciding what they do, but they shouldn't be doing it in the dark. And engaging them as partners, as I referenced before, is really an important way to get there. And that's, you know, a big part of the Yale story.
Yeah, and I think, Dan, you know, you did a really good job of looking at that and setting that as our focus area right now. It used to be said, we kidded about this just the other day, that you know, cash used to be king, but as terrible as it sounds, I think cost is king now, right? In order for us to be able to manage that pressure on our revenue curve per unit of service, we need to be able to build a common language that allows that partnership between the physician and the hospital to be able to have a conversation about a variation. And what better way to talk about variation in care than looking at the cost? As you said, it can't lead it, but our ability to understand the cost of the care, looking at that cost of care by service line, looking at how that cost varies across, you know, locations that where we provide that care, and it'll allow us to not only manage the cost of the care, but maybe we need to consolidate where those services are provided. Maybe we currently do it at all five of our hospitals now. Maybe that needs to be over the next 2 years located at three of the hospitals out of the five hospitals. So that's some of the ways that we've been looking at making sure that we look at cost in both a very service line level way, but also strategically, that's how we're going to be able to move forward over the next couple of years as we transition to the new value-based care model.
Thank you for that explanation, Steve. So Dan, perhaps you can start us off with the next question. In your opinion, what are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities facing hospitals and health systems in the next 10 years? And then maybe after Dan, Steve, you can share your thoughts here as well.
Well, I think it's a really interesting time to be asking that question, because I think the answer is changing quite a bit. And I had an interesting experience a couple of weeks ago where I was in a closed-door session with the CEO of one of the most well-known healthcare delivery systems, certainly on the planet, a name everybody would know. The question that was asked him was, you're a doctor, what would it be like to, what would you tell someone who's thinking about going into medicine now, like to be a doctor? And he said that this is absolutely the best time to be a doctor, period. And I don't think that's a response everybody would have given. And it was interesting when he unpacked why he was saying that. You know, his explanation was, well, there have never been more tools at your disposal. There's never been more information that you can use. There's never been more care or help that you can give to the people who are coming to you. And there's never been more of an opportunity to practice at the top of your license. You know, so instead of looking at something like retail health as a threat, that's taking away a lot of coughs and colds that physicians maybe didn't really like all that much anyway. So it was just a really interesting perspective. And so I think the biggest challenge for any leader, and therefore any health system or hospital right now, is optimism. There is an amazing opportunity in front of where we're going, but it's going to require, in front of everybody relative to where we're going, but it's going to require, you know, a slight tweak, if not a major tweak or rebuilding of the business model itself. So that's going to create opportunity and risk for everybody. But there's a lot of health systems, Intermountain's one example, you know, organizations who are really pursuing smart growth and taking more of an asset light strategy in terms of building out new businesses underneath their umbrella of care that they provide. So using their skills and abilities in new ways to solve different problems. As these large health systems are forming, that really is the biggest change that's occurred in healthcare in the last 20 years is the systemization, if you will, of care delivery. It is really going to be difficult for people to be as small and agile as they need to be and really operate in a way where they can compete with others who may be trying to come in and steal some high margin businesses that they might have. So you're going to see both things. You're going to see organizations trying to be more agile that are big, and you're going to see smaller organizations that are coming in and trying to do carve outs. And I think the last area, which I think is absolutely fascinating and it's huge in relative to its opportunity, is that if you look at mortality, I just heard this stat the other day at the Wall Street Journal Health Forum, that if you look at outcomes, you know, relative to mortality, 10% of that is 10% of the time it's determined by the type of clinical care you did or didn't receive. 30% of the time it's genetics, and 60% has to do with your environment and the, you know, kind of where you are, where you were born and when you were born, right? That old kind of proxy for social determinants of health. So I think that taking on that challenge of taking that much broader view of what they're really trying to do in and for their community, whether that's related to the opioid epidemic, whether that's related to, you know, building out fresh food pharmacies in the community, understanding that that is part not just of the social good that they need to deliver, but the economic good that they can deliver is really going to be an interesting challenge and a great opportunity for hospitals and health systems in the future.
Thanks for unpacking that response, Dan. Steve, I'll ask you the same question. In your opinion, what are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities that you see facing hospitals and health systems in the next 10 years?
Again, I think Dan framed it in a great way. I've been in this business for, unfortunately, a very long time, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, and, you know, for the past 30 years. And I think it is a time of optimism and excitement. And I look at our opportunity. The one thing we do know from the data, as Dan mentioned at the beginning, leveraging the facts about the care that we provide to our patients, I think there's an amazing opportunity to do two things. Improve the care that we provide to our patients, which means a lot of folks, you know, realigning the way that they do their work now around providing care. And then if we do that appropriately, and we have the right information, we have the right, real-time systems that are then followed along with our ability to measure our improvement in cost, you know, we could actually continue to provide that care at a much lower cost and improved value. And I think the ability, going back to the scale, leveraging analytics and delivering that value, we could actually deliver on that three-legged stool, if you will, about how it is that we can change healthcare moving forward. So I think we're on the cusp of being able to do that. And again, there's a lot of things that allow us to do that now. And one of them is the funds flow and the payment mechanism. You know, we have a business model that, if we follow through with this, can actually change value. Some of us have been around since when DRGs, diagnostic-related groups, were put in. I think they were put in about 30 years ago. This is the first major change in the business model, again, organized around value. And I think it's an incredible opportunity for us.
Great. You have both covered and discussed some really interesting and fantastic information today. Dan, is there somewhere people can go to learn more about what you've discussed?
Yeah, absolutely. Steve and I and a few physicians from Yale are going to be presenting in a couple of weeks at the HFMA annual conference. So look us up if you're going to be coming. At Yale, we've been able to partner together over the last couple of years to focus on sharing some of the experiences that their organization have had. And there's a symposium that we're thinking about pulling together maybe in the fall. So stay tuned and look for that. Last thing I'd mention is we did write a book on this topic. It was mentioned at the top of the introduction. called Margin Plus Mission, a prescription for solving healthcare's cost crisis. A lot of our experience with a lot of different organizations are summarized in that book, and that's something that's available, a book that's available on Amazon, or you can go to www.stratadecision.com, our company, and find some information on it there as well.
Thank you, Stephen and Dan, for your time today and for that thought-provoking discussion. We also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Strata Decision Technology. You can tune in to more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.